Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in Plainsman Trading versus Cruz.
Please support. My name is Tim Patton and I represent the petitioners, the Richardson heirs. The Richardson heirs are claiming a non-participating royalty interest in uranium in and under the Cruz Ranch on the Cruz, on the Gulf of Cruz, and the respondents in this case. The trial court rendered judgment in part declaring that the Richardson heirs have no right to royalties in that uranium in the Court of Appeals affirmed. Central issue before this court, and on which the court granted writ of error, is whether the surface destruction test applies to a non-participating royalty interest. Both lower courts said that the test did apply, relying in part on a jury finding, an affirmative jury finding on the elements of the surface destruction test, namely that the extraction of the uranium under the Cruz Ranch by any reasonable method from the date of the conveyance, the time of trial, would deplete, destroy, or consume the surface estate.
But you're not asking for the mining of the uranium, are you? Is anyone asking for the mining of the uranium?
We are not. All we are claiming is a royalty interest. The other petitioner is contesting a half interest.
And your royalty interest would be there when it's produced, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But until such time as the person or people or whoever has the responsibility for mining decides to do something, your interest is there, but nothing is going to come of it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so none of the surface is going to be destroyed.
If and when the uranium is produced, we would, if we prevail, be entitled to a fractional portion of that uranium, and that would be it. We have no right to disturb the surface.
What's the purpose then of having this theoretical right if nobody's going to mine the uranium? Who cares?
Well, obviously, the surface owner, or whoever owns the uranium, has the right to mine that uranium. If they, in this case, the crews have leased it, given a right, to a company called Uri Minerals. When Uri Minerals says at some point within the next 5 years they will in fact produce that uranium. It's not being produced now because it is more economical for Uri to buy it on the spot market overseas. But at some point, I'm told, and that's what the record reflects, that uranium will be produced because it would not be economical for Uri to give up the lease. So it will be produced. So we're talking about more than the hypothetical interest.
Well, in your opinion, is uranium a mineral?
Post-Moser, which is January 1983.
Do courts have some magical power to say what's a mineral and what's not?
Evidently. And it appears to change with some regularity.
So, but we have to deal with the context when we're talking about the definition. Is that correct?
I agree with you.
And so uranium is a mineral if it's on the surface or not on the surface?
If you're applying the surface destruction.
No, yeah. I'm just saying, I want to know what's a mineral.
Well,
because this lease was for minerals in, on, whatever. So, as I understand the conveyance, it didn't have anything to do with the location, but that's for purposes of the surface destruction test. Let's talk about where it is.
The party stipulated that it's found between 150 and 190 feet of the surface and no event lower than 200 feet.
So it is or is not a mineral if it's on the surface and up to 200 feet?
You can't define whether it is or is not a mineral without using the surface destruction test in terms of the ownership of the minerals. There's a jury finding in this case which would vest the ownership in the surface estate owner.
Mr. Patton, don't I, isn't it your position that uranium is a mineral and that you've got an interest in, a 1/32nd quality interest in uranium? And regardless of whether there's a surface destruction application or not, don't I understand from your brief as the Richardson heirs that your interest is not dependent on whether or not they find a surface destruction or not? Your interest is a 1/32nd in all your uranium.
That's correct, Your Honor. Regardless of who owns the minerals, how you classify uranium, we have a reservation of a royalty interest from a stipulated, unambiguous, a deed reservation. What is confusing about this ownership concept is that with the definition of minerals, it assumes that there's only one attribute of the mineral estate. There's actually five. There's the right to lease it, there's access to get the minerals, there's delay payments, there's bonus payments, and the royalties. There are five separate attributes of the mineral estate. They're separately conveyable, they're separately taxed, and they're treated separately. So there's no reason to treat ownership like a royalty interest. And that is consistent with what the court did in Acker, Reed versus Wiley 1 and Reed 2. If you look at what the court did in those cases, they adopted a manner of enjoyment test. The way you reconcile different property interests is you look at the conveyance and what was conveyed, how the parties were going to enjoy what it was they were conveyed. The surface destruction test evolved because what would happen would be a severance of the mineral and the surface estates. At that point, it became unclear about who had the right to disturb the surface, whether the surface owner or the mineral owner. So you adopted a rule of presumed intent, where it was presumed that they would not have intended a conveyance which would allow the mineral owner to destroy the enjoyment of the surface owner in the surface estate. So taking that manner of enjoyment test, what you have here is you have a surface owner who has the full right to enjoy their surface. We can't do anything to interfere with that surface. We have a royalty interest holder who can enjoy their royalties without interfering with that surface right. So you can reconcile the two manners of enjoyment, to use the Professor Kuntz test adopted by this court, in an easily fashionable way. That's what we're asking the court to do.
What rule of law are you asking the court to articulate? Would you have us look at the origin of the grant or reservation, or would you have us just specifically look at whether you've got a possessory interest or not of the surface?
Justice Owen, if I had to pick a rule of law, I would pick the rule articulated by Justice Gamage in Leffel versus White, I believe, in the case, is that you construe an unambiguous deed reservation from the four corners of the document. And you look at that document, and you would apply as written if the party's intent is clear. Also in Leffel, what the court emphasized was, if you can see from the four corners of the document what the parties intended, you don't resort to an arbitrary rule of construction. And the surface destruction test is an arbitrary rule of construction.
Are you asking us to do away with the surface destruction test?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. What I'm asking this court to do is to not apply it to a situation where it doesn't need to be applied and where it was never intended to be applied.
You're saying that as a non-participating royalty owner, you don't care how or when it's produced, but you just want your share of it when it is.
Yes, sir. Right?
The amicus Northwestern Resources argues that if your position prevails, the non-participating royalty will consume the other royalty interest, participating interest in the minerals. What's your response to that?
Well, I saw that for the first time about an hour ago, so it's going to be a quick response. First of all, the lessor, in this case the Cruz, they can take into account, they can look at the deed records and see if there's a reservation out there. And also in that amicus brief, they point out that under their construction of the lease, that's what the Cruz family did. The amount of
it might make the minerals essentially unproducible if you had, for example, instead of a 32nd, an 80 or more non-participating interest, wouldn't it, or not?
I'm not sure that's the case, but that is something that you have to take into account.
At some point, it would.
Yeah, eventually you divide it up enough.
If a fraction were up high enough, there wouldn't be enough left to entice a producer to come in and develop the metal. You're right.
I think that's true, but that is something that you take into account when you're deciding to purchase the property, purchase the mineral estate initially. You look at that mineral estate saying you can buy it. You look at it and say, well, I can buy this estate because it's profitable for me, even though there's these non-participating royalty interests out there. Or you can do what the amicus characterizes the lease here as doing, is the Cruz, if we win, that's taken into account in the lease. I'm not sure that's a correct construction of the lease, but the amicus attorneys, who know more about oil and gas than I do, say that's how people protect themselves.
But at least for your purposes, in response to the Northwestern brief, if we adopted your position and made it retrospective, then if there were such large non-participating royalty interests out there, they might make an existing production uneconomical. And in the future, someone who was faced with such an outstanding interest would either have to try to acquire part of that interest, or the minerals would simply go unproduced. Is that true?
I think that's going to be a case-by-case basis, depending on what advice they got from their attorneys. You get a title opinion, like there was in this case, and it said you need to be aware that there are these non-participating royalty interests out there. Supreme Court hasn't made a definite decision. You need to take that into account when you're deciding to lease on, enter into a lease on this property. Part of the title uncertainty here is not attributable to what we're arguing. It's attributable to the surface destruction test itself. There isn't anybody, no commentator, and really very few members of this court that have written on it, who would conclude that the surface destruction test enhances title stability. In order to find out who owns the minerals under the surface destruction test, you have to know the location of the substance, the method of available mining, whether that's a reasonable method. It's called in the law journals title by technology. You start with the conveyance, and you have 10, 20, 30, 40 years of mining methods that pass, and that determines the title. So a lot of what's in the amicus about the havoc our position with REEC on titles isn't attributable to what we're saying. It's attributable to the surface destruction test, which is why I believe an opinion by Justice Hightower, the Gilbert Hill case, court emphasized that that's the reason the court in Moser abandoned that test. It just created a complete mess for title examiners. I'm going to leave the rest of my time for rebuttal. There's another petitioner has requested two or three minutes of the court's time to argue some charge points. Thank you.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Ken Hanema from Corpus Christi, and I represent the other defendant in this lawsuit, Plainsman Trading Company. I am mindful that the Court did not grant my application for a writ of error on any express point. Therefore, I will be very brief. The Court granted my writ, obviously, because it granted the Richardsons. The reason I came here today is to ask the court to reconsider the jury point charges that I had written in my application. We think that is important to the jurisprudence of Texas. The complaints that we had about the jury charge were basically about the definitions or instructions on what the phrase is, reasonable method of mining meant, and also the phrase consume, deplete, and destroy meant. As best I can tell, there have been no appellate court decisions that have expressly defined what these broad terms mean. these broad terms. Therefore, in my opinion, open the door for lawyers to argue many different things, which promotes litigation, which makes the surface destruction test kind of a battle in the courtroom over who owns the minerals. And in so doing, it does not promote stability in land titles. It's very much the argument Mr. Patton just made. Therefore, I'd like to ask the court to consider those jury points. I will not argue my brief, and advise us what the court really means when we apply the surface destruction test. What do we mean by reasonable method of mining? And other than that, I have nothing to say. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court,
I guess the thing that bothers me about this case is that everybody seems to want to get away from the ACCA decision, which in my mind is still the case in Texas insofar as the surface destruction.
Could you speak up a little bit?
I'll do my best, Your Honor. The ACCA case is still the law in Texas. Insofar as what the surface destruction test means.
Counsel, why should the surface destruction test be pertinent here when we're talking about a non-participating royalty?
Because you're talking about minerals, Your Honor.
You're talking about
the
minerals.
The non-participating royalty interest in the minerals.
In the minerals. And that gets back to my question that I asked the preceding counsel about whether or not uranium is a mineral.
Well, yes, sir, I think it is a mineral.
And you say it's a mineral that the very fact that it is considered to be mined is going to be controlled by the surface. Any interest in that mineral is going to be controlled by the surface destruction test.
Well, I think under the ACCA case, if you're going to take a mineral or any other substance that's going to consume, destroy, substantially impair the use of the surface, and there's no specific provision in the deed that reserves or creates that interest in the mineral.
But we don't have someone here that's seeking to mine that mineral. We're talking about a non-participating royalty interest.
Yes, sir.
And if it's never mined, then no one gets any benefit from
that. Well, you have the same situation if I gave you half the interest in the minerals under a tract and you never mined it. You see, whoever owns the minerals has the right to utilize the
surface. A non-participating royalty interest does not have the right to do any mining.
But he has an interest in underneath the guy that owns the minerals that has the right to destroy the surface. In other words, Your Honor, using the allegory that I guess is used so many times in terms of what rights you have in minerals, if you had a basket of straws and you had half of those straws represented surface rights and half of those straws represented mineral rights, and I made a conveyance to you of a non-participating royalty interest, and illustrating this, I'd pick up one of my straws to put it aside to see what I conveyed, and what I conveyed would be part of the minerals. So if I then conveyed the minerals to somebody else, that party would have the right to destroy the surface.
If you conveyed the non-participating royalty interest, they don't have any right to destroy the surface.
That's right, but it's still a mineral interest. And if the surface destruction test is a test by determining who owns the minerals as to which it is, what it is, then if they are part of the minerals and the surface destruction test says that uranium and lignite and coal and limestone belong to the surface owner, if the taking of them would reasonably destroy the surface, then the surface owner owns all of those minerals, whereas all of the other minerals are owned by mineral owners and they're not participating royalty interest owners.
And so a grant of minerals in, on, or under doesn't mean anything.
Well, it does after 1983.
In and on We just forget that. We just going to talk about minerals under.
I'm sorry?
I say the in and on doesn't mean anything because that's the circuit song.
Well, in, on, and under could be both. Unfortunately, you have the circus.
Say the circus owner owns the entire feed.
Yes.
And he decides to convey a mineral interest.
Yes, sir.
Then when they lease in, on, and under that mineral, it doesn't mean anything as far as the circus is concerned.
If you follow within the general intent laid down in the original cases that laid down the surface instruction test.
So
if there is a specific language within that conveyance that says, you know, that you intend to convey the uranium or any other near surface mineral.
But in, on, and under isn't specific enough?
As I understand the ACCA case, you have a rule of general intent that a deed that is simply conveys oil, gas, and other minerals in, on, or under
and
a
so
particular
you,
tract of land does not convey such minerals that the taking of which would destroy or just consume or substantially impair the use of the surface.
So you... I do not agree with the Martin versus Snyder.
Oh, no, sir, not at all.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
What's your objection to Martin versus Snyder?
Well, I don't understand the logic the court used in the first place. It's sort of hard for me to understand how they can treat a conveyance for non-participating royalty interest.
I'm sorry?
It's hard for me to understand how the 13th Court could consider a conveyance for non-participating royalty interest or a reservation of non-participating royalty interest as not being a severance of the minerals, when there's no question but what this court and all the other courts have held consistently that a non-participating royalty interest is part of the minerals.
But even if you hold that it's part of the minerals, it makes some sense, obviously it made eminent sense to us at one point, that the right to produce the minerals could not so interfere with the surface as to destroy it, that the surface owner wouldn't have conveyed that right without expressing it more directly, and that therefore the mineral producing interest does not own it absent some expression in the deed to the contrary. But a non-participating interest has no right to destroy the surface. They're just there to collect.
Well, I think
so as a matter of pure logic, it seems to me that the Martin case makes some sense, that the non-participating interest really shouldn't be burdened with the surface destruction rule because they can't destroy the surface.
Your Honor, if you take the ACCA case and you're saying that we've got a rule of general intent that we're just going to make a blanket conveyance as normal deeds on the go of all the oil, gas, and other minerals under a tract of land or civic interest in them, that civic intent is, the general intent is, that the grantor is not going to be conveying out something that's going to destroy the surface, take away his interest in, you know, in the surface of the mineral. If you look back to the fact that there are many, many deeds that create and reserve non-participating royalty interest in oil, gas, and other minerals in Texas, many of which came about way before we ever considered having uranium. My guess is that you would probably find that most of them are for 1/16 or half of the royalty. As a matter of economics, well, I can remember a time when there was a 10% royalty paid for uranium. I've never seen an instance where uranium royalty was greater than the royalty that was provided in the usual oil and gas lease. The way it compares different to what's given now. Nowadays, as I think the record shows, the 1/16 royalty interest is the greatest royalty interest that any landowner gets under a lease for the mining uranium. So what you do is, if you don't apply the general rule of intent in this, you look at the fact that a landowner wouldn't think that when he's conveying half of his royalty, as I think was the usual thinking when you conveyed a 1/16 confiscated royalty interest or reserve one in 1963, that you'd really be conveying all the royalty. And that's exactly what happens if you put into the, if you don't apply the accuracy and the logic that goes behind it to all of the mineral interests that are reserved or created in a deed that's executed prior to 1983.
So that you agree with the amicus Northwestern that
I can assure you they're absolutely correct.
That this will give rise to circumstances where the outstanding non-participating royalty exceeds the producing interest.
Yes. That's the instance you have here. In fact, the testimony in this case is that in order to induce Mr. and Mrs. Cruz to execute a lease, even though they realized, you know, although they thought that their uranium interest was above 200 feet and near surface minerals under the Reeves II doctrine, that there still was the question as to whether or not this non-participating royalty interest had a claim. You know, we've had a conflict in the Court of Appeals decisions for some 10 years now. In order to induce them to make an agreement to make a lease, you or I agreed that in the event Richland Heirs had a royalty interest, that they would have to come up and pay them a 3/132nd royalty interest. It's not really as phrased whether there was a greater royalty interest, but was they get a royalty interest, period. In other words, if executing the lease and had it not been that you or I agreed to give up an additional 1/132nd under the circumstances. Of course, times have changed. As the testimony shows, that when that lease was executed, uranium was selling for something like $70 a pound. By the time we went to trial, it was closer by uranium in the market to $8 a pound. The economic question.
Mr. Cooper, let me ask a question.
Yes,
sir. If I understand the surface destruction test, it really came about from the notion that a surface owner would not separate the minerals from the surface. I mean, there'd be no intention of a party to convey the surface of property to someone else if there wasn't some sort of protection that the surface was of some value, so that you can't sit there and have someone who wants to do some strip mining claim their ability to get the minerals to wipe out this other estate that's been separated and given to and sold to somebody else. And that kind of where the surface destruction
basically
came from?
Basically, that's it, yes, sir.
Okay. Because of that concept, could a surface owner who obtains the surface of this property, who has no mineral interest, destroy the surface themselves and mine the minerals?
I would say if he was in a situation where he on the surface and he had uranium or any other mineral like limestone, or which is really not a mineral but it's been classified within that court decision, or iron ore or lignite, and that's all he owned was the surface, but because it was near surface minerals and the taking of that would destroy the surface, he could take it, it would belong to him.
So what is it really the posture of this case where the crews who are the surface owners with respect to one half of this mineral issue here, the surface owner, what's really happening is the surface owners want to use the surface destruction test as a mechanism to actually acquire interest in minerals that, but for the surface destruction test, would have been transferred to the Richardson Air, well, not the, this Plainsman Trading.
Well, I don't want to use
that. That's that one half, you know, we're arguing about one half of this interest. And aren't the crews who brought this claim really attempting to use a surface destruction test as a mechanism to obtain a mineral interest, the other one half mineral interest in the uranium?
I'd rather phrase it the other way, Your Honor. They did brought this action for the declaratory judgment to establish that they own the uranium which lies within 200 feet of the surface.
Okay.
Because I think what they did, you know, when these deeds, when the 1963 deed created the severance of all of this on the thing, I think their rights were established then. If we follow this, you know, this court's ruling in Acker versus Wynn down to the Mosin case, which said after that, it's going to belong within the minimum.
This court has recently addressed the reasonable accommodation doctrine with respect to mining of minerals, obtaining minerals under the surface estate, meaning that the owner of the minerals has the right to come on the property and take reasonable action to extract the minerals, but subject to sort of a reasonable accommodation. I haven't seen that in any of what I've read in this case, but the argument has been made that the solution process is a reasonable extraction method that does not interfere with the surface interest. Is the reasonable accommodation doctrine a mechanism that perhaps makes the surface destruction test obsolete?
Well, I think that's what the Mosin case said, but it only makes it as the deeds that are executed after 1983 or where there's been emergence of the surface and the minerals after that date. Prior to that time, the surface destruction test still is applicable. And if you overrule that case and go back beyond 83, I don't know where we're going to be as far as the law is concerned. Most of us have been writing title opinions based upon the Acker case and the cutoff on the Mosin case, you know, from that point forward.
The argument made by the amicus, Texas Utilities, that somehow or another this could end up with a non-participating royalty interest owning a portion of the surface owner's rights without ever having got the conveyance from the surface owner, and a similar argument made that somehow or another a non-participating royalty interest could conflict with or exceed some other outstanding interest in the chain. That really couldn't happen, could it? Because you can't convey what you don't own.
Well, trying to think of how to answer that within the context of where we are. Basically, no, you can't convey what you don't own. The question is, when the non-participating royalty interest deed was executed, applying the ACCA versus amendment ruling to it as expanded, when you conveyed oil, gas, and other minerals, and you applied the rule of civil intent to it, you weren't conveying an interest in the minerals.
That's right.
That would destroy the surface sort of thing, like you're raising it, the freedom case, you know, it's subject to those rules. But if you go back and apply it now, you would be taking something that they did not convey under those rules.
But the mineral interest owner, having taken his conveyance before that under the Acker rule, would not have taken the uranium, and therefore if he subsequently grants a non-participating royalty, it can't be over the uranium, can it?
That's right. My question here, though, is if this one came about before. Yeah. And I don't think that makes any difference, because in my mind, a severance is a severance of the minerals, whether it's of a non-participating royalty interest or professional or temporary or half the minerals.
Mr. Cooper, yes. Historically, what was the reason bar in, on, and under back there before we had uranium? Why were those words used if they didn't talk about anything that might be on the surface?
Judge, I made a conveyance one time of a tract of 640 acres of which a refinery was going to be built on. And I conveyed the surface only, reserved all the oil, gas, and other minerals in, on, and under the land. And I had a big argument with the lawyer on the other side, because he said all I did was convey him the very top surface soil on the thing, and I couldn't get him to understand that what I thought I was doing was simply reserving the right to take the oil against the minerals, you know, and under. So I don't know, that language has been in, I've been practicing law.
But I'm just saying that language would indicate to me that a non-participating royalty owner would be entitled to their share of anything that was used in, on, or under.
Except that if you apply the Acker case, then the Aga case comes back and says that would not be the intent to convey them any interest in any minerals, the taking of which, even though it may be done by another party, would consume, destroy, deplete, or substantially impair the use of the service. I don't think that hit on and under has any magic words with it. I think that's the identical language.
Is this an archaic phrase that they got in the habit of putting in back there a long time ago, and maybe it has some significance and it's just been carried on?
I think it's something that's been carried on for years and years and years, and I think you'll find it not only in non-fish paper royalty interest, but in any conveyance of any type of money, ordinarily.
I think that's true. That's true.
I think I use it myself. I'm a little particular when I convey surface now, reserve it.
So if you want to convey something that might be extracted from near surface, then you've got to explicitly set that out?
Under the Wallensock case, you do so. Wallensock says if you're going to reserve one of these minerals, which the taking of which would destroy the surface, then you've got to specifically describe what it is.
Any other questions? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Under ACCR, in Reed 1 and Reed 2, the surface destruction test is a rule of construction. It's a rule of general intent, which is created to resolve potentially conflicting rights to use the surface. This case does not involve potentially conflicting rights to use the surface. And simply stated, that's the best way to resolve this case. This does not involve a situation where you have parties competing in the right on how to enjoy the surface estate.
But in another sense, it doesn't make any more sense that, at least under the logic prior to 1983, that the owner of the fee would mean something by conveyance of minerals and something different by conveyance of a non-participating royalty. In other words, if the surface destruction test has validity as to what the fee owner's intent was in the conveyance of the minerals, surely he wouldn't have a different intent in conveying a non-participating royalty.
Well, under the manner of enjoyment test, which is a presumed intent, under ACCR, you don't look at the actual subjective intent, that presumed intent might be different for depending on which attribute of the mineral estate you're talking about. If you're talking about the right to mine and disturb the surface estate, you might have one presumed intent. If you're talking about the right to get royalties if and when it's mined, you might have a different intent. Remember, we're not talking about subjective actual intent. We're talking about presumed intent. One of the amicus briefs, and I think in the respondents brief, they talk about, well, the surface is still going to be disturbed here. Well, if it is being disturbed, it's kind of what Justice Enoch alluded to, it's a self-inflicted disturbance. The crews are leasing the property. We're not trying to do anything. So to the extent there's a disruption of the surface estate, we don't have any part in that. Again, we just have to wait and see what happens. In Schwartz versus State, this court described the surface destruction test as a device for the construction of ambiguous conveyances. And conveyances that are ambiguous because they, again, create potentially conflicting rights to use the surface. The latest amicus says, well, that's a curious statement. I think it's a shorthand way of saying it's wrong. But the fact remains that's really a 9-0 decision. It's a concurrence by Justice Ray. And here it's a rule of construction, again, that doesn't need to be applied. The court has a handout of our deed reservation. And again, the party stipulated that it has a clear, complete, and unambiguous deed reservation. So all we're asking is that the deed reservation be enforced as written. You referenced just, you know, to the reasonable accommodation doctrine at Hawk. That is what Moser did. It basically said that they'd abandon the surface destruction test for uranium and the owner of the uranium would be able to mine it, but he'd have to pay compensation to the landowner. The significance of that is that it's an extension of the manner of enjoyment test. What the court did was accommodate the two competing interests in the mineral or surface estates, compensate the surface owner, but allow the mineral owner to enjoy his estate. And again, that's what we're trying to do here, is allow the royalty interest owners to enjoy their royalty interest without interference with the surface estate.
Does that, but also does that modify the questions that would go to the jury on a question of fact on whether there's any reasonable method of production of a mineral destroys the surface, or whether there can be a reasonable method of the method of extraction, the solution method that's been mentioned, is a method that's a reasonable accommodation such that there could be still beer production. That was really my question here. There's a question about any reasonable method results. That's what triggers the surface destruction, but under the reasonable accommodation doctrine, it's whether or not there's an alternative reasonable method that does not impact on the surface.
Well, in terms of Moser, by reasonable accommodation is not the term of art in Hoff. It's just allowing each party to enjoy their interests. And although it's not clear whether there are any fact issues under Moser at all, what you do is determine whether the substance in question, in that case it was uranium, is a mineral within the ordinary natural meaning of the word. I assume it would be a subject to expert testimony. It may be something that the court just decides, like near surface lignite. So to the extent we're talking about a post-Moser case, I'm not sure there would be any fact issues.
And post-Moser, conveyances of mineral interests and non-participating royalties ought to be construed the same way, according to the same rules.
A post-Moser uranium conveyance is construed under Moser, and that's the extent of the law. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument in this call. The court will take another brief recess.